Lucinda Washington, Global Weekly's Chicago bureau chief, had insisted that Cameron Williams visit her the next time he came through the city. It had not been that long since his story ran on the abortive Russian invasion of Israel.
"You know you need to talk to me,"
she had emailed him. She was right, and though she refused to call him by his nickname, he loved seeing and talking with her. She was like a second mother. 50-ish and heavy-set with a dark chocolate complexion, she was beloved by her employees, to whom she was ferociously loyal.
"I read something in your piece, Cameron,"
she said. "I figured you would.
God got your attention, didn't he?"
Buck sat facing her in her cluttered office, slouching uncomfortably in a straight-back chair, his feet crossed on a corner of her desk. He nodded.
"If you were my son, I'd whoop you upside the head, sitting like that, tearing up your spine."
"You don't still smack Lionel, do you?" Buck said, peeking at the photo of the smooth-faced youngster.
"Can't catch him anymore, but he knows I can still take him."
Lionel was around 12. Buck wanted to keep talking about the boy to keep Lucinda out of his head.
"And I can still take you, Mr. Senior Writer, all up into your young self. Tell me where you found that scripture you used in your cover piece."
Buck told her that Chaim Rosenzweig, an avowed agnostic like himself, had put him in touch with religious scholars.
"You couldn't call me? I've been in the Word longer than those old coots, and I see stuff in the Old Testament they've missed."
"You'd have pointed me to the same passages?"
"Course I would. You think that wasn't the first thing that came to my mind when I heard of a massive attack gone bad? Prophesied, honey. Shouldn't have surprised anybody who knew a thing about the Bible, which you don't."
She seemed to assess him.
"God's gonna get you yet, boy. I mean, you were right there when it happened. You can't deny the miracle. You can't deny the hand of God. You can't even claim to still be an agnostic. You're just a step away from Jesus."
"Oh, I don't know about that. I can't deny the supernatural in what happened. It makes no sense otherwise. But why did God protect Israel, a nation that denies Jesus as the Messiah?"
"Huh," Lucinda said. "So you are thinking. Well, let me ask you this. Would you rather have a God who treats his children like they deserve to be treated? The Bible calls the Jews his chosen people. He's not going to unchoose them. He's going to do what he promised, regardless of how they respond."
Leon Fortunato was struck that Romanian President Gheorghe Vasil appeared to be an older copy of himself. They were of the same blocky height and build, though the president was much more jowly and his hair was gray. In his late 60s, Vasil was a humorless politico in private, gregarious and smiling in public. He had told the people he had one more term in his old body, and early polls showed him a huge favorite over several potential candidates. But the polls did not reflect any public opinion over how he would fare against the much younger Nicolae Carpathia. No one had ever reached the presidency directly from the lower house. However, everyone was, of course, familiar with the charismatic peacenik, who had proved so eloquent and articulate, endearing himself to fellow party members and ingratiating himself with the opposition. Vasil seemed bemused as he read Leon's card.
"I am meeting with you, Mr. Fortunato, not because I have time or interest, but because Mr. Carpathia begged my indulgence."
President Vasil had come out from around his enormous ebony desk that appeared as if it had grown where it stood, and sat across from Fortunato at a small round table. Fortunato smiled, trying to soften the bite of his words.
"Have you ever experienced Dr. Carpathia's opposition to one of your initiatives?"
he said, writing on his small notepad all the while, clearly piquing Vasil's interest.
"Of course I have. He has spoken often and loudly in opposition to our defense initiatives. His insipid pandering to the public with his peacemongering make garish his aim to unseat me someday."
"Someday?"
Fortunato said dismissively, still writing. By now, Vasil was leaning to see what he had written. Fortunato turned the paper upright and slid it across.
"Are you aware that Dr. Carpathia is a partner of Jonathan Stonegal's? He has been aware of and signed off on every transaction. Every transaction."
Fortunato fought to suppress a grin when Vasil blanched and cleared his throat. The older man checked his watch, stood, and buttoned his suit coat.
"What is your schedule like, Mr. Fortunato? I would like to treat you to a drink at my favorite café.
Fortunato had known, of course, that the presidential offices were bugged and that any serious discussion of this nature would have to take place elsewhere.
Very well,
he said, rising and donning his overcoat. Vasile told his secretary to cancel his appointments and have security bring a car around and reserve a table at Caruta's, the Wagoner. Leon knew the place well. It was a hole in the wall less than 2 miles from the capital, and the patrons had been trained to leave the president to his cups, should they see him there. Leon loved the pomp and circumstance that surrounded even a brief jaunt by car with the president. Citizens milled about on the street, hoping for a glimpse of the man they had seen on state television. When they crowded the vehicle, the secret police held them back, and soon Vasile and Fortunato were on their way to the café. Within minutes, they were jammed into tiny quarters. Vodka was brought to the table, along with 2 glasses. Vasile downed 1 glass and held it up for another pour. Leon handled the task. He had barely sipped his own drink.
Excellent,
Vasile said. He knocked back the 2nd glass and set it down loudly.
Another?
Leon said.
Later, Vasile said. Talk to me. What are you saying?
Fortunato had long loved the directness of the powerful. They did not have the time for small talk, and that was not what Leon was here for anyway.
I am saying that your fortune, the one the public believes is tied up in trusts during your presidency, is being managed by not only Jonathan Stonegal, but also Nikolai Carpathia.
Vasile started glowering.
And what are the ramifications of this?
Need you ask? Surely you would not expect the Romanian people to believe your presidential salary alone finances your wife's annual stipend and your son's palatial estate and stallion breeding operation, your own storehouses of precious metals, American stocks and bonds, European landholdings. Were word to get out that you, sir, fund all this with income criminally gained, why, it would all be in jeopardy.
Vasile squinted and leaned forward.
And is Carpathia not also vulnerable if he has such information and has not reported it?
Fortunato sat back, still speaking softly.
No one can determine when this information came to him, but he has no wish to reluctantly come forward and announce his abject disappointment in a worthy opponent he has long admired.
But he would he not?
Of course he would.
Fortunato was warm in the smoky, crowded place, and he wriggled out of his overcoat. The president, flushed and sweaty, not only left his on, but also left it buttoned to his neck. He folded his arms and lowered his chin. He stared at Leon, and then at the table.
So this is Stoercier.
It is indeed extortion, Mr. President.
Vasile rested his elbows on the table and pressed his palms against his generous cheeks. He sighed, inhaled as if to speak, then appeared to rethink himself. Finally, in a hoarse whisper, he said,
I suppose you are prepared to tell me what the man wants.
Of course I am,
Leon said. So this was why Irene had been buttering up Rayford. She wasn't on his case about anything. She listened. She encouraged. She was pleasant. But then Irene sweetly lowered the boom.
May I talk with you about something without your being offended or getting upset?
He smirked. What'd I do now?
Oh, no, nothing. It's just that I want to talk with you about something Pastor Billings is preaching about, but I don't want you to get the wrong idea.
And what would the wrong idea be?
Well, for instance, you're thinking that I'm trying to change you or criticize you? You're an adult and can make up your own mind, but Pastor Billings has been speaking on something so incredible that I would sincerely like your opinion about it.
Rayford was in a bind. If he begged off this discussion, he would seem as unreasonable as she was. If he acceded, and he didn't seem to have a choice, he would have to endure yet another come-to-Jesus meeting. You know something? He said, brightening. That stuff I promised Raimi is in, and I have to go pick it up.
Can't that wait a day? Anyway, Rafe, stuff is not going to make up for your absence. He doesn't want stuff. He wants you.
3 new toys all at once? And may I say, big boy toys? We're talking a 4-wheeler, a snowmobile, and a bike for when the snow clears?
You're trying to buy him.
Rayford snorted. See how you are? See what you do?
I'm sorry, Rayford. Truly I am. I shouldn't have said that.
But you meant it. You just don't know when to quit, do you?
How much?
Gheorghe Vasil said.
How much?
Fortunato parroted.
Surely you don't think you can buy off a man like Nikolai Carpathia. He does not want your money. He wants your job.
A laugh escaped Vasil.
Never. I die first.
Fortunato loved this. He leaned forward until his nose was 6 inches from Vasil's and told the President of the Republic of Romania,
That too can be arranged.
I could have you executed for even hinting at such a thing.
But you won't. If anything happens to me, the same thing would happen that would occur if you do not comply with Dr. Carpathia's wishes.
Pray tell.
I believe the plan is to start with your son's operation. Maybe a barn burns, a few horses are lost, harbingers of what could happen to your grandchildren.
Vasil flushed, obviously smoldering. He narrowed his eyes and pointed a sausage-like finger.
You leave them out of this. You wouldn't dare.
Oh, this would be on you, sir, not on Carpathia. The ramifications of your response are wholly up to you. You've had a good reign, and you enjoy a fortune. Retire. Enjoy. The people will continue to revere you, provided they are not made aware of your finances.
Vasil seemed to fade from red to gray.
So what? I announce I will not run for re-election, and you think that paves the way for Carpathia?
Oh, no, it's not quite that simple. You must resign within 1 week and engineer Carpathia's succession.
Without an election? Impossible. Carpathia and I have not been bitter rivals, but who would ever believe that I am stepping aside so a peacenik can assume the presidency?
I do not know, Mr. President, but that is your task.